You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm J. Patrick Kulikin, columnist for the Las Vegas Sun. And my guest today, Robert Lang, director of Brookings Mountain West. Thanks for being here.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So you've been here nearly 2 years now, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you give us some impressions about your time so far? What surprised you? What would have been pleasant surprises? Let's start with that.
You know, you can think you know a community from the outside, but until you move somewhere, you really have no basis for judgment. I think it's interesting. You know, I was never one that just fell for the idea that, hey, the Strip is the whole totality is community, because I'd had a lot of business dealings. I had worked for companies that had invested in the city. But I didn't realize how distinct the Strip was as a space and how a kind of zone of morality is built around the Strip in a way.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it almost as if there's hyper-family activities when you get away from the Strip, like a place like Henderson. You know, it's just loaded with like soccer fields and kids running around, and it's almost in defiance of the Strip and the reputation of the Strip. It's you know, I used to say to people, if you pull the Strip out, it's like Phoenix, but it may be even a little more Phoenix than Phoenix is, if you will, if you get the imagery. And I didn't have as good a sense of that until I moved here, that, you know, that there's a lot of folks that just, you know, even if they work in industries related, like they could work in something like gaming technology where they don't have to be on the Strip. Their work is tied to the Strip and tied to exports, actually. But, you know, unless some family member comes and visits them, they just don't go wandering down to the Strip. I remember being that way in Washington, D.C. with the mall, you know, the same kind of thing.
So it's a more intensely family town than you suspect it would be.
Yeah, its reputation is nowhere in that regard. And I tell this to relatives. You know, I get a lot of pushback. Also, I don't think I understood how stigmatized a place this was. I mean, I'm from New Jersey originally, and I grew up in New Jersey in the years that Jersey wasn't interesting like The Sopranos or even, God help us all, the Jersey Shore.
Uh-huh. It was toxic. It was just toxic waste.
Yeah. And, smell. Yeah. That's what came out of there. And so I, you know, would travel the country and I would hesitate. You had to press me for all to get me to say, I come from a state that borders New York, you know.
The tri-state area.
Yeah, the tri-state area. It sounds like maybe I'm from Connecticut. Well, you know, here it's the same thing. The last city I came from was Alexandria, Virginia. And I'd meet somebody in business and they'd say, oh, that's a nice place. Yeah. I seem to remember being there on a nice afternoon. I'd say Las Vegas. And they'd look at me now and say, how? How do you survive that place?
Yeah.
Because I'm there 48 hours. I've had my fun. And if they said to me, I'll pay all your ticket for one more day, you'd have to hold a gun to me to get to me and accept it. And I said, I'm not using it that way. It's a regular old, you know, place I'm living. And I think it's vastly underestimated. The other thing is that there's all this derision associated with the fact that we're non-sustainable, we're parasitic. You know, as we were discussing previously, the American Sociological Association came through town and they laughed at us. The irony was that they had to use our space because they had a conference planned for Chicago, and because of labor disputes, it got busted. There's only one place in America they could turn to. And, you know, yet there they were. My God, what are you doing out in this godforsaken wilderness? You're nowhere near the water. You know, there's a lake right next to us. You know, this whole notion that this city ought not to have been built. And thus, whatever misfortune it finds is its own fault. This is a ridiculous notion.
Mm-hmm. Back to that stigma that you mentioned, and you know, we've all a lot of us who have moved here have experienced the same thing. You tell family and friends, and there's kind of a chuckle, or what have you. I find that sometimes people in Las Vegas forget how the rest of the country views us. Do you think that's an important dynamic?
Well, only in as much as it relates to our economic development prospects.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, first off, it's been wonderful. At one level, this has been the most successful place to have ever been built on what is a fairly narrow economy. You know, to have a region of 2 million that exists off tourism, which is, you know, sort of a taken for granted statement in the 70s would have been you could never get a region this size out of tourism, you know, but thus is our peril. And it's been built on a description and depiction of tourism that is adult focused. You know, they had a moment or two for about 5 minutes, you know, the family period. But really, it's been, you know, what happens here stays here. One of the challenges in the town is to describe it also in terms of a routine business address. And I think we've made some progress to that. I mean, we've, at the Brookings Institution, have been reframing the way the city is seen, describing the vitality of the convention. I mean, I actually said at the ASAs, if Las Vegas didn't exist, somebody would have to invent it just for the conventions and not just for some obscure, you know, esoteric subject like sociology, which, you know, having a doctorate in sociology, I could even, you know, half-jokingly say, you know, is not as critical as would be the technology conferences that come through. I mean, my God, every time the cell phone people get together, it's like a Woodstock. They remake the field. And they need our space. There's no other substitute for the kinds of scale and really the access and the, you know, the kind of amenity that are embedded here already. It's really a free rider on the entertainment and gaming complex. And so, you know, there's this whole other story to tell out of Las Vegas. And I like to say, you know, what happens here at 3 a.m. stays here. But what happens here at 3 p.m. is probably somebody cut a deal to change the technology in your cell phone. You'll never hear about it. It's not credited to the region. It has no reputation based on it, but it's actually related to the bigger project, which is when you build this much airport capacity, these many rooms, this much entertainment, you're going to get the entire business community of the country passing through at some point or another and using it as a key place of exchange and exchanging ideas, patents, you know, connections. And without it, I think we'd all be a little worse off.
Mm-hmm. You said that Brookings, the venerable think tank of Washington, D.C., with now a satellite office here in Las Vegas, so you've been trying to reframe the city's image. How have you been doing that?
Well, you know, for starts, we're actually working with SRI, which used to be Stanford Research Institute, on a project for the state that looks at economic development. And what will come out of that is that some areas that are related to gaming actually are targetable, like information technology and so on. And so the clarity and focus of a new economic development imperative will help shape that reframing. It's not just, gee, look at us, we've got this other dimension. It's that, what does that dimension mean as far as business then? So what else comes of all this capacity? For example, internet gaming. If we get something like internet gaming, and it looks increasingly promising, we will, there is already existing capacity in actual gaming for kids right now in the city that exists that would give us a competitive advantage. And most importantly, it would reinforce.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's, you know, like if you play Mortal whatever, you know, mm-hmm. online, you know, the city has the main switch in the internet, which mm-hmm. is a little known secret called, you know, switch communications. Thank you, Enron. One of the good legacies of Enron is that it left in place this huge series of trunk lines that went into the city from all these service providers. And we have the unique access to really the nation's entire internet system on direct access. And as a result, for example, even services like Fox News are run out of a little room over at Switch Communications off Decatur. So what we get if we get internet gaming is a reinforcement of that. And you'll bring thousands of technicians to the city that are high paid. And what could result from that is that digital media, other things of a related nature, cloud computing, which is one of the capacities we have, could all play off that. The university would have an opportunity to invest in higher education and invest in the kinds of fields that are as uniquely situated here as the hotel school is. In other words, if the Switch Communications Complex is one of a kind, there is only one other in the world. It's actually the Amsterdam Exchange in the Netherlands, which is there's no Asian version of Switch actually at this point. It's sort of all strung together through as they used to say, plumbing, pipes, you know, pneumatic tubes. We have that asset. We could build the equivalent of what the hotel school is, because the hotel school is here and the hotel school is notable because so many people want to come here for part of their internship, for part of their career development, to be near the nearest, to be near the biggest tourist complex in the country. Well, you might want to be near the biggest switch in the country on the internet, depending on your subspecialty within IT. All these people will help this city. They'll help change some of the reputation, which is that the city is not just tourism, but maybe by extension, a ton of technology that relates to gaming and to entertainment that is now something that you carry around in your cell phone. So all of that would be good because what it is without displacing the core of how the city is known, you're adding to that and it just seems more multidimensional rather than, you know, oh, they've decided not to do gaming anymore. It's that Las Vegas is reaching literally, you know, hate to use a pun here, it's in your pocket in a way differently than is the previous reputation of Las Vegas in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. So beyond that that reframing, you've been tasked with a new economic development effort that came out of the legislature, and have a partnership with the legislature and Governor Sandoval. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, the very late in the last session, actually the last piece of legislation with a mere 10 seconds left, AB 449, is a restructuring of the state's economic development, and it ties some new resources to it, a catalyst fund that would be resources available to lure in businesses that are targeted by key sectors, which we're going to establish, and a knowledge fund to attempt to infuse the universities with some research capacity directly tied to the industrial mix in both Reno and Las Vegas. And it's a plan for the whole state, but the two key components are the Las Vegas and Reno metropolitan areas, which is a vast majority of the state's population and most of the economic development in the state, and the South in particular, is overloaded in terms of the share that it represents in the state. And there's opportunities in both locales. I mean, it turns out that the situation in Reno is a little different. What happened in Reno is there was some diversification in the economy. Part of that is that as the core industry cratered, which is their entertainment, their gaming, and now they're behind Pittsburgh in this capacity, actually, the share that was non-gaming went up just on its own. And also, the state has been investing historically for a few decades in some research assets up there, the kind of innovation assets that the state has disproportionately north, in part because one, there was political acumen. You know, smart people up there grabbed some of these assets. The other is the South didn't seem especially interested in them before it sought economic diversification. So both regions are going to get a kind of customized treatment. And the mix that the report suggests that the state focus on is going to be different in both regions. And ours are really very much tied to gaming. In other words, it's not, oh my God, we need to run off to some biotech whatever. And it's very simple things in some cases. For example, we don't even provide the medical services that one would predict for a region of 2 million people. Some large share of that just leaks out of the state and out of Las Vegas. And so
people leaving to get medical care elsewhere. Yeah.
Easily done. Like, for example, let's say somebody one day decides from Southern California to come here and gamble. More of them should, by the way, keep coming. They lose, we win. And then some hotel worker needs a complex medical procedure. And the next thing you know, they're in Southern California returning it. Only they have the expert labor. They have the high wages in that case. That's something where we don't have to lose a lot of these procedures if we make proper investment in our medical capacity. And some of that involves the state being more serious about investing in the medical capacity region. It pays out because the leakage of this is killing regional income because it's this expensive service. And if we don't have to be a biotech center. We just need enough biotech to reflect basically how big we are, which is a pretty substantial place at 2 million.
Mm-hmm. And a different or more robust regulatory regime?
In terms of regulation and practice of medicine, we've had significant problems with our medical care. The other thing about medical care is, look, this for a region this size, we've not had a medical school. And one of the impacts of that is that there's just not a lot of trust and confidence in a lot of this community about the skill level and the practice of medicine.
Definitely identify with that,
And you get that. The establishment of a fairly serious, decently invested in medical school would go a long way to paying its own way, because what it would allow the region to do is capture an increasingly large share of medicine. So it's penny wise, pound foolish to sort of shortchange ourselves in this kind of capacity, because most immediately what it would do is, no, it wouldn't necessarily attract medical tourism. It's not that easy to imagine that people are just dying to come here and convalesce on the Strip. This is a kind of, you might want your health to be here sort of place. But more like, could a worker on the Strip who's providing these entertainment services find confidence, find competent physicians, and enough, just a sufficient scale of medicine to reflect? We have a scale of medicine that's more like, Tucson scale with 1 million residents, and Tucson has a very good medical school. Located within it. Phoenix has a medical school now in it. All of our competitors, Salt Lake has a wonderful medical school. Albuquerque, a much smaller region, has a medical school. It's that the state chose to put the medical school in a region that now contains 15% of the population, where we contain 73% of the population. That could be rectified politically.
Okay, so that's that's one area, a simple one, although it takes some political will. But what are some other ones? that you're looking at?
Well, you know, again, the variation exists between both Las Vegas and Phoenix, and I mean Las Vegas rather, and Reno in this regard. Another area is logistics, which is, you know, this is a one of the other assets this region has that is out of scale, meaning it's much bigger than you would ever predict for a place with a couple of million people, is the airport. And the airport has got a good upgrade just about to come online, which is a new international terminal. Now, there has been a sense of hesitancy to expand the amount of air cargo as an inland port that comes through here, in part because the go-go-go model was just build another mega resort and it'll induce more tourism and then so on and so on. Follow this model, and we did for 20 years, and we went from a region of, you know, several hundred thousand people to 2 million. Well, that model is probably maxed out at this point. And so the airport's some of the pressure's off.
No more building on the strip.
Not in the short haul. Yeah. There'll be tweaks to it, and there'll be some building later on. But, you know, right now, I mean, you know, the real opportunity is that, you know, Ralston's got a, you know, flash up there today. My God, the Sands and Macau is doing this or that. Yet we own that hotel. That's a branch of our firm's. You know, that money flows back. The profits from it flow back to the United States. Dude, okay, that is something good for us. If it were not for that global reach, we wouldn't have anywhere near the health of the firms that we do. One of the things we have is that our biggest companies are in much better shape than they would be if they were reliant only on the domestic market for tourism and gaming, because they have branched into these other emerging parts of the world. And this is good for this region. There's nothing bad for this region. It's not good for Reno. They don't have this access. It's not good for Atlantic City. We're not Reno. We're not Atlantic City. We are to gaming like Houston is to energy. We are the expansive, well-branded, technically competent force spreading around the globe. In addition, we have an airport that is now increasingly globally connected and could compete effectively with LAX for things like air cargo. LAX is this booming air cargo center, and it's the worst place in the United States where you could ever bring it in. One, you're competing as you pass out of the region through these two tiny passes at Coachella and Cajon with a port that has to be in LA because it's on the water. And it's, you know, the other thing is that LAX is a busy international airport, and all these planes are landing in the middle of the night next to these upscale neighborhoods on the water. It's a mess. Right now, realizing it's a mess, Victorville has decided to take a decommissioned Air Force base and use that as a forwarding point for all kinds of air cargo. We could grab this even better than they could. It's that we've not had this discussion because the whole frame on this has been, dare it not get in the way of anybody trying to get to the Strip. Well, we've got a capacity for that now. We could do these kinds of things. And logistics pays well and doesn't require a college education. We have a workforce that has low education attainment and could be retrained pretty easily into logistics. That's another area.
Okay. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV. This is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Patrick Kulikin. My guest, Robert Lang, director of Brookings Institution Mountain West. We're taping on Monday, so tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tuesday is the National Clean Energy Summit. The fourth one they've had. It's going to be at ARIA. We're discussing economic development and economic diversification. What role can energy play?
That's another area of growth that we'll identify. Again, you know, there's a lot of concern that the green economy has been hyped, you know, at the max. You know, it's 3 jobs for every $10 million invested. The green economy is a complex, longer-range prospect as far as the state, as far as the country and the world, for that matter. But it is something that is necessary to emerge for a couple of reasons. One, you know, there is a possible, probable impact on the environment of the carbon economy. And I know that's in dispute these days. There's a lot of folks that would like to deny it, but still the weight of the scientific evidence indicates that's true. And those resources are harder to generate than they've been in the past. We're not running out of them. I'm not some doomster who's going to tell you that, you know, fill up now, it's not going to be there tomorrow. It will. It'll be, you know, Canadian oil sand, but it'll be there. It's more
it
that.
It just gets more expensive.
It's more expensive. It's a little dirtier. And it opens up an opportunity to mix new technology in because it becomes more competitive. Also, and this is most importantly for the state of Nevada, more so than the sun probably, and the geothermal potential, which the state has in abundance, especially up north, is the fact that California, has voted itself a very high barrier, a very high burden, I should say, of renewable portfolio, which is 30% of the state's electrical generation has to, by 2030, by state mandate, come from renewables. And in that instance, you know, you have an economy the size of France next door to us. This is a country unto itself whose, you know, lion's share of new development in electrical generation is going to come out of renewables. We're right next door, and we've got a lot of solar, and we've got a lot of geothermal. We are a logical place. The risk we have is this, that all the technology for this is actually imported from somewhere else, and we are just the space in which it's developed in. And this has happened in mining, where the state has not nearly the amount of resource in the mining technology that, are, for example, a region like Toronto with Barrick Mining has all of the skill, all of the technical know-how, the finance, you know, the way they are using that skill is that we are essentially a developing country to them. And then they are, of course, the gold is sold to places like Switzerland where it's refined into luxury goods. And at this point, you know, we might as well be, you know, some sort of emerging economy in the sense that we're not really part of the high-end, high-value, high-wage, white-collar technical part of that industry.
So we have all these gold deposits and then these out-of-state, and in the case of Barrick, foreign corporations, they bring their expertise in and then they just pull it out and the money leaves.
The money,
I mean, to some degree, obviously, there are mining jobs in rural Nevada, and there's some taxes paid, although very friendly.
It may be the least leveraged industry we have in terms of, you know, given that we are the place where it exists. So it's not like, you know, people worry about this. I've heard some discussion, you know, if you jack it up, they'll go somewhere else. Well, there's not that many places to go. And I wouldn't even recommend jacking it up. Actually, the first point of access for this discussion should be, you know, what else about your industry could be proximate to the mines themselves? You know, work with us here. You know, we have a very attractive region. I noticed that, for example, there's a way of now looking. The online websites that do all of the real estate listings can check where people are downloading. And it turns out the country that downloads the most American real estate is, surprise, surprise, Canada. You know, they're our biggest trading partner. And the city they're looking at most commonly is actually Las Vegas, followed by Miami, you know, looking in warm places. Again, surprise, surprise. So it's not like, you know, my God, it would be such a burden for somebody from Toronto to take a branch of that firm and locate in a city where you have nonstop flights and you're just added a ton of new capacity for processing, you know, customs. And for pushing people through a system pretty quickly for passport clearance and so on. So this is, you know, a great city for branch offices. And, you know, it means that as long as we even got that share out of the gold industry, then the fact that, you know, they have been privileged in terms of taxes paying less than cigarettes, for example, is a little less of a problem.
Mm-hmm. But again, back to energy, your fear is that we become, they come here, these out-of-state or international firms, they come here to get our renewable energy, but we don't really have any of the high-end economic development associated with it.
And none of the R&D. And we're not really in control of it. You know, there are, as we speak, conferences on the books in Houston saying, well, if energy changes and it's not carbon and it's renewable, how does this city remain at the forefront of all this technology, of all this finance, of all this capacity, even if we have the cloudiest weather, even if we've got hurricanes coming in one after another? And it doesn't matter that we've got the sunshine. There's nothing about that guarantees that we're then the leading technology producer in the area. Check gold on that. We got the gold. What do we have for the gold? We don't have, you know, a Barrick with a major office here.
Okay, so what do we do? As you say, the green economy, there's some concern that it's been overhyped. Maybe that's true. And you say it's a much longer term prospect. So what do we do to prepare for that?
We have to build the knowledge economy share of that industry from the get-go. In other words, we have to partner with and we have to secure key innovation assets in the area of geothermal and solar. Now, what's been happening in geothermal? Well, one of the top people in that field was at the University of Nevada, Reno. Where are they now? They're in Utah. How? The University of Utah just picked them off. And the reason they picked them off is that the state has a fund where it transfers resources to the universities to hire faculty if those areas are defined as high priority areas for the state's economic development. And so Utah has been great at defining these areas and developing a capacity that connects to private industry for transferring this technology from universities into the private sector, for stimulating job development, for stimulating venture capital investment in the private sector. And what it is they saw an opportunity. We right now are on people's shopping lists for our talent. We're getting poached because we're not organized around the notion that we can secure these assets by making similar investments as other states are. And other states that are making these investments are principally run by Republicans. They are, for example, Utah. And Huntsman, who's running for president, was the key player in that state for developing that capacity. But Sam Brownback, a very conservative Republican in Kansas, is in charge of a program that is seeking investment in areas like ag science, especially animal bio, cancer research at the University of Kansas, at Wichita State Aviation, because they're a large manufacturer of aircraft. And so they saw those as key assets. We, on the other hand, do things like we got a hotel school. It's sitting in a monstrosity of a 1980s building shared with the business school. When we got offered $25 million from Harrah's, now Caesars, to go and build a brand new state-of-the-art facility, the state couldn't scrape together the matching money. Not only could it not scrape together the matching money, the school's poor. Why? It doesn't keep its tuition. That school is filled with out-of-state and out-of-country students who seek our resource, who seek the Strip, and seek the school proximate to the Strip. And where does that money go? It goes up to Ely and Elko. It goes into the general fund. No other state is doing this. It's unilateral disarmament.
You have some strong feelings on regional discrepancies, I know. Okay, so invest in our universities. What about at the K-12 level?
At this point, one of the big priorities has to be K-12. And, in fact, for the U.S.
prevents people from coming here. Right?
For the U.S. as a whole, K-12 may be the biggest challenge. I mean, the U.S., has what it has left by way of competitive advantage is college, but more specifically graduate education is where the U.S. is still in a pretty commanding position with regard to the world. That position's eroding because it keeps getting cut. But, for the moment, it's still in pretty robust shape. K-12, especially urban education, may be the greatest single challenge that the country faces. Now, here's our challenge. Contrary to the popular conception of this region, or perception, I should say, of this region, we're a majority minority under age 18. And so we have a special challenge because we've got language barriers. We have extra necessity for investment if you're to bring all these folks into the workforce. Now, there's people upset, like, what are they doing here? They're here. All right, so here's your choices. You can educate folks who are here and build their human capacity, build their potential, have them lift the region's and the state's economy, or you can pout about it. And, we've done a decent share of pouting. And, I know there's this notion that it ain't just money, it's all this sort of stuff. You know what? That's fine in states where they actually spend a lot of money. Mm-hmm. At some level, some of this is money.
All right, my guest has been Robert Lang, the director of Brookings Mountain West. Thanks so much for being here. You've been listening to Neon Eden, KUNV 91.5.